Hello, you're listening to Gays Gaze, in which we're gay and we gaze into media that's by, for, or about ladies who love ladies. And sometimes we talk about other stuff. My name's Erin, and your skin is worse than a cattle's, you millennial bitch.
And my name is Erin, and how can I cheer on your sex life?
And my name is Samantha. I like girls, especially those who are smart, mean, and stab others perfectly. They're the best. Shoutouts to me, because while I was reading the quote, my AirPod fell out, and I was able to put it back in my ear while saying it and able to multitask, because despite the fact that we're recording at the South by Southwest Platinum Lounge, we don't have a headphone splitter and are sharing AirPods again.
Yeah, Sammy and I are sharing my AirPods as we record in the South by Southwest Platinum Lounge, aka Sammy's apartment today, instead of the typical Erin apartment where we've recorded the last few episodes. So if you hear any strange background noise, it's fine. You have roommates. We cannot perfectly accommodate complete silence today.
And today we're talking about Life as a Girl.
Yeah, the J-drama from 2018.
Yeah. Oh, and also Sammy's here, our friend and previous podcast guest, Sammy, everybody.
Yeah, welcome back. Yeah. We're glad to have you.
No, I'm happy to be back. I love doing the podcast.
And the people love you.
Really? No, yeah. I was going to say real quick, I meant to say this earlier. Somebody sent that really nice message on like Tumblr saying like, when is Sammy coming back? And I just want to say to that person directly, Erin and Erin sent me like the screenshot of that like anonymous question on like one of the worst days I was having, and it literally made my day. Thank you so much. It makes me so happy that people like me. I was so worried that I was gonna come in here and like annoy like the real gays fans.
No. Sammy, we appreciate you and your input.
Thank you.
I never posted that Tumblr ask because I still every episode I say, I'm gonna check on the Tumblr. And every episode, I don't check on the Tumblr, and I don't update it.
That's fine. I have the same thought, and then life happens.
You're going to open up that Tumblr, and it's just going to be people, like, just begging you to do Danish Girl. Just begging for another Eddie Redmayne episode.
Yeah, it's going to be just Samantha praise. Content warnings?
No, I wasn't sure how y'all felt about it, but just, like, as, like, a... As a fat girl, the show has a lot of diet culture and, like, fat phobia in it.
Yeah, I did not like that about the show. It is, and it fucking blasts you in the face for episode one.
Yeah.
She's weighing her cereal. I'm like, don't do that. I can't look.
And it just comes up every episode, too. Every single episode has, like, just a little bit of fat phobia in it, where it's just, like, it's inherent.
Yeah. But yeah, anyway, content warnings for transphobia and for misgendering. And as we mentioned, diet culture and fat phobia as well. I can't really think of any others. Really blatant transphobia, honestly.
Yeah. Very casual, too.
I have my thoughts.
but you'll hold on to them.
I'll hold on to them. I'll hold my horses.
Yeah, are we going to go episode by episode?
Yeah, I think that we should go episode by episode on this one for our discussion. So, Joshiteki Seikatsu, or My Life as a Girl, is a 4-episode J-drama series that came out in 2018. The first episode really sets the scene for the series and gives you some established characters, and then the next 3 episodes are kind of like standalone short stories that each have their own plot. So I think it just makes most sense for us to talk about each episode by episode.
Mm-hmm. Same.
Then we can kind of wrap up at the end. Actually, before we start, though, I do want to talk a little bit about the production, if that's okay.
Oh, yeah.
So this drama, it was based on a novel of the same name by the author Sakaki Tsukasa, and they chose to keep their gender and identity a secret, and this is a pseudonym, so nobody knows exactly what their identity is. If I were to speculate why, maybe it's because that they're a closeted trans woman and writing this kind of about their own experience. I honestly am not sure. I think the other noteworthy thing about My Life as a Girl is that Miki, the protagonist, is a transgender woman who is, in this instance, played by a male actor named Jun Shison, which is not great. From everything that I read, he consulted pretty extensively with a transgender model and pageant winner whose name is Satsuki Nishihara in order to help him prepare for this role. And she reportedly spoke really highly of him and said that he quickly caught on to all of her guidance and he was genuinely really curious and wanted to hear a lot more about her personal life experiences, then use that to inform his portrayal in the series. And also after the production, he was pretty vocal about speaking up about trans people's rights in Japan. And he said that he hopes that the main thing that people take away from his involvement in the series was that it's okay to be true to who you are, and it's also okay to love whoever you love, which I think is nice, and more than a lot of American actors might do in this situation, honestly.
Yeah.
I think that's nice. I think what would have been nicer is, yes, as opposed to just having her as a consultant, why not just have her be the lead actress? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, she's not an actress.
But, yeah, but right. I just mean, like, there are, like, trans feminine actresses, yes, in Japan. And, like, mm-hmm, there have been for a long time. I mean, look at, like, Black Lizard, Phoenix Parade of Roses, like...
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to hold the horses.
No, I'm with you. And I also do think that part of the reason why he was picked is that he was a pretty prominent book or anime to drama actor. In particular, before this, I know that he had done Anohana, and then, like, immediately after this, he did The Way of the House Husband, which is also really popular. Yes.
He's the house husband in that?
I don't know if he's the house husband, but he's at least one of the Yakuza guys.
Oh, okay. What a range.
Yeah, he's done a whole bunch of other dramas, most of them book two drama adaptations.
And to his credit, I do think he's, for the most part, pretty fine in this. Like, yeah. I think he does, like, a decent job with, like, the material, and, like, he does, like, capture a certain, like, kind of, like, vulnerability and also, like, feminine grace, and, mm-hmm, like, there is something trans-feminine in the performance, but it is still...
Why
it goes with, it goes without saying that it is frustrating whenever a cis man plays a trans woman who isn't Eddie Redmayne, but...
Every man who wants to play a trans woman, he needs to go to Sammy specifically and, like, have Sammy rate him.
I fully agree. Timothy Chalamet, my Twitter DMs are open.
I love that you're just anticipating that Timothy Chalamet is, like, waiting for an opportunity to play a trans woman.
He's just another one of those men that if we fed him estrogen for 2 years, all I'm saying...
Oh my god.
I digress.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just like, why go through all of this effort of hiring a consultant to have this male actor do this role when you could literally just cast it? I think it's just for the fact of being exclusionary and just for the fact of getting somebody who has a large, extensive, like, background already in popular drama acting that will draw in audience members. Because, like, what other opportunities for trans actresses would there be in the drama scene? And if they want to get someone notable for their lead, it just sucks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Want to talk episode one?
Let's do it. Yeah,
let's go.
Okay. Miki is a beautiful and very kind woman who moved to Tokyo from a small town to work at a fast fashion company. On the side, she runs a blog called My Life as a Girl, where she posts about her experiences as a transgender woman working in the fashion industry. One day, she's returning from work, and she finds a man in her apartment complex who says he's looking for his friend from high school, Ogawa. He says he's homeless, and he was hoping that he could stay with Ogawa for a little while, even though they actually haven't talked in years. When Miki tries to get away from him and get into her apartment, he desperately tries to follow her inside, but she manages to keep him out and lock the door behind her. The next day, when she goes to work and then she comes home, the homeless man, he's still outside of her apartment, this time with beer and a donut. And she lets him inside so that she can eat the donut.
Yeah.
It's very delicious. He says that his name is Goto. And it turns out that Miki is actually Miki Ogawa. She is the classmate that Goto was looking for, but because she has transitioned since high school, he didn't recognize her. Initially, he's a little surprised, and he asks her if she's happy. And she says, yes, she is, but the one thing that she isn't happy about is that she doesn't have a girlfriend. Mostly, he just wants to know if he can sleep on her couch for a little while, and she agrees to this so long as Goto can help her find... or set up mixers, which are popular in Japan, and they are dating events for singles, kind of like speed dating, but more casual than that. She obviously wants to attend these so that she can try to find a girlfriend. Later on, presumably the next day, I think, she and her friend from work go to a mixer together. While her friend is there looking for a man, Miki is only interested in the women that are in attendance, and one of them in particular stands out to her. This is Yui, and she's a very cute attendant that Miki knows from a local shop. When Yui comes to the mixer, she and Miki have this conversation that is really cutting, and they're both making a ton of digs at one another's fashion. Eventually, Miki pulls Yui out of the mixer and kisses her on the cheek. And Miki says that she likes women who are smart and mean. And then she says, "I'm a man who cross-dresses." And is the narrator speaking to us, the viewers, Miki at this point, she says that telling women that she is a man who wears women's clothes is a lot easier of a way for her to get with girls than it is for her to explain that she is a transgender woman who still likes women. And so this is a way that she is able to connect with Yui at this time. Yui is pretty intrigued by Miki, and the two are flirting, and then they go back into the mixer together, but they sit on a couch and they caress one another and kiss in front of all of the other attendees, which prompts them to kind of like kick them out, basically.
Yeah.
Yui and Miki then leave to go on a walk, where Miki asks Yui if she has a boyfriend, and Yui says that yes, she does have a boyfriend, but they're long distance, and so it's okay for her to play around with other people. The two of them go to a love hotel together, and they stay in this underwater-themed room, and they're laying together in a clamshell bed. We can assume that this is after they've had sex. And Yui says that she could envision herself being with Miki, but then the two of them leave, and Miki kind of laments the interaction in an alley afterwards, and she opens her phone and looks at a selfie that they took together, and she deletes it from her phone, saying that the interaction was just fleeting, so she shouldn't get to keep such a memory because Yui isn't hers to keep herself. So that's where the first episode ends.
Yeah.
What stood out to both of you?
The way that we came across this was, I think, we just found, like, a gif of that scene of them, like, kind of, like, digging at each other's appearances and whatnot, and, like, calling each other awful things, and then, like, cutting to them being in bed. We were like, oh, this looks great, especially me as a trans woman who loves mean women. I was like, oh, this show is made for me. No, that's not made for me. But all of that stuff was very enjoyable.
Yes.
Yeah.
I do love a mean woman, and there is a mean woman.
This is true.
I love the mixer scene because it's really fun of, they kind of like gamify the like interacting with guys where it's like, oh, this one lady, she's showing off her boobs and that's how she's getting attention. Miki's friend is like, oh, look at my shoulder. And then all the guys are looking at her. But then Yui's talking about how she loves plum wine and she only buys high quality clothing. And it's and like, and all the men are just like these like stupid like AIs, basically.
Yeah, that actually is something that I wanted to bring up that is a recurrent thing throughout this entire series. It's the idea that women are very perceptive and calculated in how they act, whereas men are just like really stupid and boring and ignorant and don't know anything, and you can easily fool them. And yeah. Goto is like number one depiction of this trope. Like, this guy is clueless. Like,
good. There's a part in episode 3 that I really liked that has to relate with to that, but we can get there.
Yeah, we'll wait.
It's funny because I kind of thought that this was like a special ability that Miki had specifically. I didn't really think about it in that way.
When we get to episode 2, I want to talk about this a little bit more too, because this also comes up with Mini-san as well.
Oh yeah, Mini.
In general, Erin, I agree with your point that, like, there is, like, this interesting, like, gamification of, like, the like, dating scene, but also the gamification of, like, every interaction is, like, very present throughout the series. Like, anytime Miki is observing something, the hashtags will, like, take up the frame of, like, just, like, oh, like, hashtag this, and, like, as she's making, like, these observations about people or things or, like, food she's eating. And I don't think it works. I think it's actually just, like, kind of obnoxious and distracting, especially for, like, a viewer such as myself who doesn't speak Japanese and is reading the subtitles. There are times on the show where the entire like screen is just full of subtitles of like these hashtags and the dialogue, to the point that sometimes like I feel like the dialogue isn't subtitled as much as like the hashtags are, which makes it a little difficult. And I don't think the hashtags really add anything. They just feel like a gimmick.
I think it's just to remind you that Miki runs a blog, because this is something that is brought up in like the first couple of minutes and then kind of like almost never mentioned again.
Yeah.
It's true.
And also, I would assume that the novel was written fully from Miki's first person perspective. I haven't read it, so I can't speak to that. I don't think it's been translated into English. But I think that that also is to, like, harp on her observations as, like, a first-person narrator for mm-hmm. the series and how she would view everything as, like, what can she post online?
Yeah. So I kind of
it's interesting
it,
in that
actually.
Way, but it's bad for, like, the plot and understanding, if that makes sense.
I think it's a really kind of cheap way to, like, get into her perspective and her, like, first-person mm-hmm. view of everything. It is significantly worse than just narration.
Yeah, it did also kind of make her seem, like, a little bit more superficial, which I don't know if that was intentional or not.
Yeah,
but
agreed.
It is. I kind of was waiting for the other shoe to drop because she... And I guess it does kind of in episode 4 with Manami, because she's like, Manami's playing the game. And then it turns out that Manami's just really genuine and, like, wants to be her friend.
Yeah, exactly. Can we talk about Miki coming out to Yui in that mixer scene?
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm so glad you're here, Sammy. I like your feelings.
Thank you. I have many feelings.
Yeah, I would think so. What the fuck?
This show was not made for me. I don't feel like it doesn't feel like it's made for trans feminine people, in my opinion. And also just, like, this idea that, like, I don't feel like it's really, like, questioned or, like, properly brought to its conclusion as far as her coming out as, like, a male crossdresser mm-hmm. and that somehow being, like, seen as, like, less predatory. I think in a way the show, by just, like, presenting that and kind of not having a lot of commentary on that, kind of just, like, reasserts that feeling that, like, a trans woman is somehow more inherently predatory, a trans lesbian particularly is more inherently predatory than a, like, heterosexual male crossdresser. As somebody who identified as a heterosexual male crossdresser for a large amount of my life, I don't know, there is, like, a lot of, like, rhetoric out there in, like, crossdressing gender non-conforming communities made up of, like, otherwise cis heterosexual men, where it's like, it's totally cool to wear girls' clothes because, like, I'm, like, also straight. It doesn't make me, like, gay or anything, as if, like, it would be bad if it made you gay or it would be bad if it made you trans.
I think that this scene in particular is where, like, cross-cultural differences just don't translate. It's my understanding that the idea of, like, a trans lesbian would be much more easily understood in America than in Japan, mm-hmm. right? Where it's mm-hmm. understood that, like, the only reason that somebody would transition is because they would like to be a heterosexual woman, right? Mm-hmm. Where that's a much mm-hmm. larger misunderstanding in Japan than it is in the US.
Yeah.
I'm trying to go into this podcast and into the show in general with an open mind and without, like, viewing this as, like, I'm gonna rip this apart just because mm-hmm. it's, like, I'm likely not the ideal audience.
Yeah.
Like, even if the ideal audience is, like, a trans woman, I think it's certainly a Japanese trans woman and not an American trans woman. And I think that's fair.
I think, and this is my perception, especially based on the lead actor's comments, that this is a show that is aimed at cis Japanese people to help them understand trans culture better. Mm-hmm. And so to a degree, I do think that this coming out scene is kind of nuanced in providing that education, because it's like giving the narration where she's like, it would be way too hard for me to explain this. So as the mm-hmm. viewer, you're supposed to understand, like, if somebody is a trans woman that likes women, that's okay and normal. And now I can see why it would be so hard to actually come out that way, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Going back to when Goto, like, first goes to Miki's house, he's like, are you, like, my old classmate? That's when she's like, look up transgender on your phone.
Yes.
Like, look up, and then, like, later on, when somebody wants to interview her about her blog, and she's talking about, like, how that would out her, Goto's like, what's that? And she's just like, I just said it, like, look it up on your phone, like, you got the internet. That was at least nice.
Yes, agreed. I also think that as negative as this feels and as shitty as it feels, and as much as I personally didn't like it, having the Yui plotline where it's like, yeah, she would be willing to casually date Miki and have sex with her, but never be in a long-term relationship, also gives, again, to the cis viewership, a more nuanced view of how hard it is as, like, a trans lesbian to find someone who's genuinely interested in you.
Yeah.
I wish that we got to see eventually Miki, like, in a happy relationship, because that's literally all she wanted from episode 1. So it feels very unsatisfying that she doesn't get to have that. But also at the same time, it's like, at least I'm glad that we showed a little bit of the nuance and the difficulty in attaining that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know.
There was her old roommate shows up in episode 2, and her old roommate's straight, but I was like, oh my god, this is it, like, they're gonna get together, but then that didn't happen.
That's the thing, is that throughout this entire show, there are so many moments of opportunity for it to, like, be about, like, Miki, like, finding this, like, beautiful, like, lesbian relationship, and every single one just, like, it's not even, like, I can't even say that, like, the plan just, like, falls through. It doesn't feel like a tragic, like, story. It feels like a lack of trying to, like, give her a happy romance. Her looking for a girlfriend is a B or C plot. Like, it is not the A plot of the show, when I was under the understanding that it would be. And so I would like my money back, Aaron.
As the one who found the TikTok that promoted this show.
Man. TikTok lies TikTok. To us again.
It was a great TikTok. It wasn't even that the TikTok necessarily lied to us. It's just that they only focused on the best parts of the first episode.
In that first episode, there is this really, I guess I want to say interesting, but I think it's misguided, parallel drawn between faux and authentic materials and things. And it kind of draws that parallel between that and Miki's femininity being, like, kind of faux. So what I mean by that is that, like, when Miki and Yui are having this conversation of, like, digging at each other, a lot of it has to do with, like, Miki's in fast fashion, like, industry. She, like, is taller, like, she's wearing, like, fake leather and stuff like that, whereas, like, Yui is more, like, all natural. She makes her own wine organically, and she eats, like, organic fruits and vegetables. She works in, like, a, like, slow fashion boutique. And so the show, like, very openly kind of makes this parallel, saying, like, Miki's femininity is also faux and kind of, like, inauthentic, but it's also still feminine and deserving of some value. But it's also important that you know it's still faux.
Yeah.
And not, like, real. I appreciate the intention behind this parallel that the show draws. Again, I think it's misguided, and I don't think it totally works. But again, I'm not the intended audience here. This is, like, certainly for, as you said, like, cisgender audience to kind of, like, learn about, like, trans women. And I think that is for, like, Babby's first effort to think trans women are human, I guess, a helpful parallel to be like, oh, faux leather's also sexy, so, like, I guess fake women are also women.
Oh, I'm no.
Like...
Oh, my God. Oh, you're so unfortunately right. Oh, no.
I liked that Miki's coworker, Katori, was also there, because it meant that, like, when Miki was defending her fast fashion, I kind of felt like she was also defending Katori there. Because Yui was taking all the attention away from Katori, so at least there was that, I guess.
I guess, yeah.
God.
Let's talk about episode 2.
Yeah.
This one is the one that is controversial, that I didn't really enjoy. Sammy is shaking her damn head.
I messaged you when I got done with this episode. I was like, I don't know if I can get through this, Aaron. Like, I was hoping that this was going to be good. Episode 2, like, made me borderline dysphoric. Like, it was,
I'm
like...
I'm so sorry.
I was like, oh,
episode
Jesus
2
Christ.
Sorry. Okay, yes. Let's talk about episode 2.
It's wild. Please go ahead.
Miki and Goto are now living together. He's sleeping on her couch, and he's annoying, but ultimately he's fine company, and they're getting along okay. He tells Miki that one of their high school classmates, a guy named Mini-san, because he was always very short, has depression, and he wants to come visit Miki to see how she's living. Apparently, Goto outed Miki to Mini, and Mini was like, I can't believe that someone lives like that. I want to actually see it for myself. Miki is understandably very upset by being outed, and does not want to meet Mini-san at first. She starts asking around her friends and coworkers, like, what can you do to help a person that has depression? One of them says that you can make gyoza, because then you can look at your hands while you fold the gyoza, and you can have a hard conversation, but with a distraction, and you don't have to make eye contact. And Miki's like, that's a good idea, we can do that. Also, Miki ends up reconnecting with her former roommate, Tomo-chan. And Tomo-chan is another trans woman that she met on an online forum, and they decided to live together. And we get a very nice little montage of her with Tomo-chan as they first started to publicly present as female at the start of their transitions, where Tomo-chan had a specialty in makeup, so she taught Miki how to do her makeup. And Miki obviously had a specialty in fashion, so she taught Tomo kind of like how to dress and helped her pick out clothes. They were great roommates until Tomo-chan got a boyfriend who asked her to move in with her. So they moved out and then they kind of lost contact. And when they reconnect, Tomo-chan reveals that her boyfriend has cheated on her with another trans woman. And she says, like, I cannot forgive him. If he had cheated on me with a cis woman, I might have been able to forgive it, because then I could have justified it and thought, I guess he wants the real thing, quote unquote.
God.
But because it's another trans woman, I can't forgive him, and we're gonna have to break up. So there's that whole secondary plot line. Anyway, Goto eventually brings Mini-san over because Miki agrees to it. Mini is immediately very, very rude to Miki, and he asks her really invasive questions about her genitals, and he's just, like, blatantly mean. He refuses to make gyoza with her and just, you know, hammers Miki with mean statement after mean statement. And Miki is just kind of casually observing him, and she realizes that everything that he says is really sharp, cutting, perceptive, and rude, which is just like how she assessed some of the women at the mixer in the first episode. Mini doesn't have any of the trademark signs of depression, and Miki notices this. And she then tells him that she understands what's going on here. As the audience member, you might think that she is going to diagnose him with a woman. But Miki then says that she knows that Mini-san just wanted to make fun of someone that he saw as being below him so that he could then feel better about himself. And then he runs off and leaves the apartment. Miki reflects on the experience. She decides to invite Mini back to her apartment, saying that she needed to deal the finishing blow.
God.
When Mini arrives, she asks them if they want to put on some of her clothing. Mini agrees, and Miki puts Mini-san in the ugliest wig and a giant scarf, and then shows Mini-san a mirror where it clicks that Mini-san wants to be a woman. Miki puts Mini-san in a nicer outfit and does her makeup, and then she and Goto take Mini-san to walk around in the street, and then they go to a convenience store. They tell her that it won't be easy for her to find her style, to learn how to do makeup, and also to adjust to living as a woman, but that she'll be able to adjust and do it, that it'll just take time. Then Mini-san leaves to go home, and Miki and Goto look at her new selfies on her social media account, and they realize that Mini-san seems to have always had a humiliation kink and to enjoy being bullied, and they wonder if this was all just an elaborate plot to fulfill that need for humiliation. Then the episode ends. What?
It's... Oh my god, the fucking...
What?
The twists, the turns, and then it's, oh my god, it's like a train wreck. It was so bad.
Yeah, this was really bad. Sammy's just, like, holding her face.
It's oh really bad. I, like...
I'm so sorry.
It was, like, it was genuinely difficult to watch. Like, it wasn't, like, emotionally difficult to watch, but it was just, like... I was watching it with Parker, my, like, roommate. Shout out to Parker. Oh my god, we were both just, like, yelling at the TV, just like, what the fuck is happening right now? Like just so many steps along the way of the episode as it progresses are just bad steps. I think the one thing that, like, was really shocking to me is, like, Miki just, like, de-diagnosing Mini-san as, like, not being, like, depressed because, like,
oh my god.
They're able to respond in a timely manner and shit like that, which is just, like, insane. And I think, like, really, like, dangerous. Like,
yes, agreed.
Depressed people can be rude, actually.
Yeah. No kidding.
The humiliation kink and just, like, the putting Mini-san and Miki very close and, like, adjacent in terms of, like, their identities is really dangerous, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you could meet a trans woman who's, like, completely asexual, like, not interested in, like, kink at all, like, none of that stuff. Just literally be a trans feminine person and completely, like, otherwise, like, sexless. And people will still, like, assume that, like, you're getting off on, like, being a trans woman, that it's, like, some kind of, like, weird, like, kink thing that you're doing. And so I think this is really, really mishandled. And, like,
completely,
it's bad. It's really, really bad. And, like, it's uncomfortable. It's
bad because it also, this is, like, totally the, like, the person who hated you and was bullying you in high school turns out to be gay. At first you think it's that, and it's like, oh, that's bad. And then it turns out to be whatever it is. But the other thing about this that I felt really weird, especially since Miki is a lesbian, and you get this a little bit in some of the other episodes, but she's like almost like competitive with other women in a way that I just like really don't relate to as a lesbian. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And you see her being competitive with Mini-san here.
Yeah. Which, it, like, being like, oh, I look, like, cuter than her. Like, I'm walking nicer than her. I'm, yeah. Like, I know what to say when somebody asks me what snacks I want. Like, it's like, what?
Why? Yeah.
Why?
It's like, this is an episode where everyone sucks. Like, Miki sucks, Goto sucks, Mini-san sucks. They all are bad. Mm-hmm. The only one who is fine here is Tomo-chan. Feel bad for that girl.
Yeah. Love Tomo-chan. All those scenes with Tomo-chan, by the way,
are perfect.
They're really, really nice. And the episode should have just been focused on Tomo-chan, and they should have fallen in love together. Like, yeah. Like, it's so easy. That's the thing. It's like that meme where it's like the boy, like in the two paths of like the dark castle of the humiliation kink like shit and like the trans lesbian narrative, and you go down the wrong path.
Yeah, you like, went to the dark, like dangerous castle with the trans humiliation kink.
And it feels so mean-spirited too, especially like the cutting from like the scenes of like Miki being like having her makeup done by Tomo when she was like a very young trans girl.
Right?
To Miki being like almost intentionally mean and like dressing like Mini-san up like shittily intentionally, like especially too is like me, like some of my very first like formative like trans feminine experiences were times that like my friends who were like cis women and cis girls in high school put makeup on me and were actually just like really like nice and accommodating and like let me wear some of their clothes and like did their best to make me feel and look feminine, and it was a really beautiful thing that I like really cherish. I like recently like saw these people and like I like almost like cried like talking to them about it and just like thanking them for like being some of the first people in my life to allow me to be feminine. And so for Miki to allow Mini-san to be feminine in such a way to just put them down is really really cruel and just like it's so
totally.
Feels so antithetical to all the other like good intentions the show tries to present. Like it feels like just transphobia the episode.
Like another side of the same coin is that Miki should not have been the person to put Mini-san into like girl clothing for the first time, because Mini-san like was so fucking mean to her. How could she go into this like with a good mentality? There's no way for her to, because Mini-san was so cruel. This is one of those things where like if you wanted to keep all of the shit in, an almost better way to approach it would be for her to call up Tomo-chan and be like, hey, I am not the right person to be helping this young trans girl figure her shit out. Do you think you have it in you to do some of this work? Bring Tomo-chan over. Have Tomo-chan do Mini-san's makeup. Have them go out and do some stuff. Get a little break from Miki for a minute, honestly. Let Miki go to a mixer while they figure all of this shit out.
Yeah.
That would have been a better path. Or just have a date with Yui. Yeah, exactly. I want to go back really quickly to what you said about the your bully in high school was gay all along. I was sitting down with one of Sammy's roommates right before this, and we were chatting about this exact issue in this episode, and I brought this up as well, and he was like, yeah, when I was in middle school, there was a guy that was always really, really mean to me, but because everyone told me growing up, if someone is mean to you, they might actually just really like you and don't know how to say it. I, like, let him bully me because I thought that he was just doing it because he had a crush on me. And it went on for, like, longer than it should have. And so, like, I also just want to say that that's dangerous on, like, multiple fronts. Not just the, like, your bully in high school was gay, but also at the same time, like, somebody bullying you because they have a crush on you. Like, neither of those things are real or true. And that's not to say that internalized homophobia and internalized transphobia that cause you to externalize that onto other people isn't an issue for people who are closeted in the queer community or questioning, because it definitely is. But I also just think that its depiction in this episode is not great.
Especially, like, the internalized transphobia is super, super real, I feel like, in the trans femme community. Like, there are, like, closeted trans girls that are fucking mean. I feel like if you have, like, a trans Twitter account, you know, like, countless, like, doing big air quotes here, femboys who are on HRT and who only, like, present as women, who are, like, constantly, like, just, like, saying the cruelest, meanest, like, shit about, like, other, like, trans femmes.
Yeah.
Like, it's extremely pervasive and it's extremely real, and I don't think it's presented very well here. This episode is, in a word, tasteless. It's bad.
Yeah.
Especially the way that the three of them part ways is that after leaving the convenience store, Mini-san realizes that they've been making fun of them the whole time and, like, runs away yelling, like, I am cute, which is, like, that fucking hurts. Like, damn, dude.
But then also they end with it just being like, oh yeah, but don't worry, she has a humiliation kink, so that's what she wanted all along, so it's fine.
Yeah.
And that's
like, oh my god.
What the fuck?
It's awful. Like, the idea of, like, having, like, your femininity as a trans feminine or gender non-conforming person being only, like, just to be made fun of.
Yeah.
Is, like, it's a fate crueler than I would ever wish on somebody as a trans person. It's, like, awful. Like, that scene where, like, she, like, finds out that they've been making fun of her the whole time is, like, really, really upsetting and, like, difficult to watch, in my opinion. And it also, like, kind of, like, goes back to this, like, idea in the first episode of, like, just how, like, fake everything is. Like, that parallel between, like, you know, faux and real femininity, but also, like, Miki and Yui, like, kind of playing a game of, like, you know, like, oh, like, let's kiss in front of people to get their reactions, which is, like, really upsetting, like, this idea that, like, lesbianism is, like, a joke or, like, fake or, like, just
for
a show. Game.
For fetish?
For show, yes.
To titillate
men. Yes. Yeah, that's really upsetting. And, like, Miki, like, even, like, saying internally, I know that she just thinks of this as a game.
Yeah.
But, and then, like, turning around and, like, being like, I know that Mini-san thinks this is real, but, man, they look so clocky. Let's make fun of them. Like,
it's so bad.
It's so fucked.
Like, what Mini says to Miki is very fucked up, but does that mean that you should humiliate this person when she thinks that you have good intentions? Like no. Don't
well,
do
Aaron,
either.
You forgot that Mini-san has a humiliation kink, so actually you're being really nice, but...
It's also, like, at the beginning of the episode, Goto shows Miki that, like, Minnie's posting about how they're depressed, but nobody's interacting with the posts. And then it's, like, at the end, like, they're posting selfies, and it's like, look, everybody's interacting, telling her, like, how she looks shitty. Like, it's like, what?
And they call that an ideal situation for her, which is, like... Just
what?
I don't understand. Okay. Like,
I know we have to stop and start talking about something.
I'm so sorry.
Positive.
I'm so sorry.
All I have to say is, if you decide to watch this drama, you can just skip this episode.
Yeah, watch until after Tomo-chan shows up, and then you can turn it off. But that doesn't even go anywhere.
Okay, so if they're not, like, if Miki and Tomo aren't gonna date, then I almost got excited that, like, the setup was gonna be like Goto and, like,
Tomo. Yes,
because
that would have been also really cute.
That, like, Goto
Tomo's
is like,
unfortunately,
oh,
straight.
You know, being with you, like, I, like, feel like I, like, really respect, like, trans women now, and, like, I would date, like, Tomo-chan. Like, that would be so cute and such a happy ending. And they just don't do it. That's, like, what I'm saying. So many, like, possibilities that are so easy and so simple that are just
maybe
ignored.
Maybe if there's, like, if there's ever, I mean, this came out in 2018, so it's probably not getting a continuation. But if it ever did, that would be cute as, like, episode, like, 6 or something.
Yeah, I agree. When Goto was first introduced in episode 1, I did not mention this, I was terrified that the plot was going to be that Miki ends up dating Goto at the end and realizing that Goto was always there for her. And this was only bolstered by the fact that, like, I know the actor, not personally. I don't personally know.
Your bestie, so.
I know the actor who plays Goto because he was one of the leads in a very, very popular BL drama, boys love drama, called Cherry Magic. So I was like, do you know about Cherry Magic?
I only know the premise. I haven't, like, consumed any of the media, but the premise is that, I guess there's a saying in Japan that if you're a virgin, by the time you turn 30, you get magic powers. And so in this series, this guy turns 30 and he gets magic powers.
He's like a normal business worker at the Moleskine factory. It's actually not the Moleskine factory, but they make, like, notebooks, and he's, like, an office worker, and he turns 30, and he's a virgin, and he can read people's minds when he physically touches them. And so he brushes up against his coworker, the guy who plays Goto, who is his senpai at the office, And he's like the cool guy that all the girls are in love with. And when he brushes up against him, he can read his mind. And he's like, oh my God, I'm in love with this guy so much. I'm so glad that he's touching me right now. Like, I wish that I could kiss him. Like, blah, blah, blah.
Here's the thing. Jude just showed me, like, the first couple episodes we watched that, like, an anime convention of that series. Yeah. I didn't recognize him.
Yes. Yeah. But he's the senpai.
Yeah. Here's the thing. Would recommend that series.
Yo, yeah, that was
like, just me remembering those episodes and you telling the plot, I'm getting, like, hot and flustered just thinking about it. It's really good. God. It's very, very sweet and, like, honestly, so much better than this.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's tropey boys love, right? Where it's like, yeah. Oh my God, he has to take care of me and I know that he's in love with me. Is he going to do something? No, he's just going to, like, make you soup and make sure that you're well cared for. Like, I never finished it. But it's good, though. What I watched was good. Mm-hmm. I watched, like, half of it.
And there's a manga, too, if you don't want to watch something.
The manga's so ugly.
Oh, is it?
I'm going to cut that. But, yeah, the art is so ugly.
You can keep it in. Speak your truth.
Speak your truth!
I got to say it once for Sammy episode.
Go ahead. Episode 3. Yeah. Samantha, take us away.
Okay. Episode 3. Miki's place of work has accidentally used a stolen piece of artwork from one of their skirt designs, and now they need to get permission from the designer in order to continue production. Miki is able to contact the designer, who is open to meet about a contract at her residence, which just so happens to be Miki's hometown. Miki hasn't gone back there since moving away, and though she isn't keen on going, she decides to make the trip to escape from the reporter pushing her for an interview about her blog. When she arrives, she is able to get the designer to sign the usage contract easily. The designer is a young woman who's out of school but doesn't have a job yet. Her mother openly talks about how ashamed she is to have a child who isn't doing anything with her life and is happy that she can now call her daughter a designer. Meanwhile, Kaori is worried about Miki having to go back to her hometown, so she meets with Goto for lunch and asks him to go meet Miki there. When the designer drops Miki off at the train station, Miki lets her know that it's okay to not be close to her parents if she doesn't want to. Goto then arrives off the train, but then the service is delayed due to snow. To make matters worse, Miki's father shows up, and he recognizes Goto. He asks Goto who the young woman he's with is before realizing it's his child. The group go to a cafe to talk, but Miki and her father don't say much. Goto talks up Miki, but using the wrong pronouns. Suddenly, Miki's brother shows up. When growing up, Miki's brother would tell her not to dress femininely, going so far as to throw away her clothing. He was obsessed with appearances, and it turns out he still is. He berates Miki for coming back, quote, dressed like that, end quote, saying that it would cause the family strife if anyone recognized her. Goto steps in, but the brother misunderstands and thinks Goto is her boyfriend. He punches Goto, and the two start fighting. Miki breaks it up, telling her brother that she dresses how she does because she has an interest in fashion and that it's what she loves. Her brother is about to hit her when the dad yells at him that it's not right to hit a woman. Goto and Miki gather their stuff to go back to the train station, and Miki says the whole thing happened because she got too close. As the pair walk away, the dad calls out, "Take care of your health, Miki." This is the first time he said his daughter's name. Later at home, Miki and Goto get a package of crabs from Miki's brother. Goto says that this must be because he wants to make up, but Miki thinks it's a joke because it's not easy to eat crab with a manicure. The two enjoy crab hot pot together for dinner.
This episode is a wild ride. Let's start with the designer plotline. The designer plotline was exceptionally hard for me to watch because Miki has so much sympathy for this girl, and she's like, oh my God, this girl, like, kind of really understands me. Like, I can kind of relate to, like, not getting along well with your family and having this difficulty. And Miki gets to be like, you know, you don't have to be that close to your family. You can go do your own thing and live your own life. Like, I'm doing great out there. And then at the end of the day, this girl is, like, super transphobic to her as she sees her off at the train station, where she's like, oh, by the way, are you a man? It's crazy that there are people like you out there. But I guess in the city, like, anything's fine. Which sucks.
Specifically, she uses the word, it's permissible.
Yes.
Which is a horrible word to use. Like, implying it's, like, morally or ethically permissible to be, like, a disgusting transsexual in the city.
Yeah.
This was one of the moments where I really liked the hashtags. Because, like, Miki's trying to, like, digest this whole statement and, like, figure out what she would like say if she was making a blog post about it, but she can't be, and she just gets so angry. And so it is actually kind of fun where she's like, she like goes from being like, oh, this poor girl, to being like, fuck this bitch, like, I'm glad I got her design, like, fuck her.
yeah, that shit sucked. That was hard. And then we get to pivot into her meeting with her dad, which this was actually difficult but tender, ultimately. I thought this was good.
This episode was, like, based, in my opinion. Like, I immediately texted you as I was watching episode 3. I was like, Aaron, I take it back. Episode 3 is based. Like, this is great. Yeah. Like,
I watched this with Jude, and when the dad was like, it's not okay to hit a woman, Jude was just like, yes, dad, slay. Yeah.
No, I was gagged. I was literally, like, mouth agape, like, looking at Parker. Yeah. I was like, did you see it? Like,
he defend her.
Parker at this point was like, by the way, totally checked out. After episode 2, he like literally was just on his phone, like not even trying to pretend to pay attention. He was like,
I don't blame him.
I like told him like that episode was pretty good, and he was like, oh, I didn't watch it. Like in the room with me the whole time, I didn't watch it.
Damn, you missed out. That 1-2 punch of the like dad being like, don't hit a woman, and then the like, take care of your health, Mickey. That was like, I was like, fuck, I'm hard.
Yeah. Also, the fact that, like, he said, you can't hit a woman after Miki literally punched him in the face. Not the dad, but the brother.
The brother.
He full-on punched her brother in the face. And then when he went to hit her back, that's when the dad intervened. It was like, you can't hit a woman.
That's right.
No, that's the thing is, it was, like, it was pretty based. Because, like, it was very, very, like, satisfying to see Miki, like, throw that punch. Because it was, like... It's a good punch. Like,
and he had it coming.
Yeah, it's a good punch. Yeah. He had it coming. And to, like, followed up by, like, the father, like, saying that is, like, so sweet and just, like, really, really nice. Especially because, like, it's not set up in such a way that you get the impression that, like, this is going to have a happy ending. Like, the episode is not framed that way at all. And so it is a genuine moment of surprise that does feel really compelling. And, like, this episode for me really hits close to home. And, like, I did cry watching this one. I mean, I grew up in the suburbs. My father grew up on a farm and is, like, a conservative. I think when I just started cross-dressing, it was, like, difficult for him to kind of, like, fully grasp why or what I was doing. And he's very, very quiet. Like, we, like, have not had, like, many, like, super in-depth conversations. At the end, when the father is explaining, like, just his sentiment that all he wants is for his children to be happy and that that's the most important thing, my father has, like, expressed, like, the exact same sentiment to me, like, in regards to, like, my conversations with him about me being trans, and he's, like, said explicitly that, like, he just wants, like, all of his kids to be happy, and that he doesn't know what the right decisions are for them, so he's not gonna make them, but he just wants us to be happy and safe, and that he's, like, proud of us either way.
Yay!
I don't know, it's really, really nice. And two, with the crabs, this is so dumb, but this hits so fucking close to home. The last night before I, like, fully moved out of my parents' house as, like, an adult, my dad knows that I love, like, seafood and made me this, like, beautiful, like, crab dinner that we had together, because, like, that's how, like, we really connected, was, like, through his cooking, because he's, like, this great cook, and so, like, you know, having a conversation with him is difficult, but, like, having, like, dinner with him and, like, being able to connect over, like, food and, like, sharing that experience together has always been the basis of our relationship. Mm-hmm. So when the crabs came out, I did start crying, which feels silly, but it is just, like, that's me.
No, like, yeah. Targeted. Oh my god, I love that.
Speaking to the happiness thing, that is something I wanted to bring up with, like, the brother assuming that, like, his dad doesn't want their, like, them to be happy, and that he, it's clear that the brother has never actually thought about what would legitimately make him happy in life, and, like, seeing Miki actually being happy, aside from the fact she still doesn't have a girlfriend, by the way, it is, like, he can't fucking comprehend it at all, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that is part of him starting to have this realization of, like, oh, I should try to do things that will make me happy, which is why I am inclined to believe that I know, Aaron, your question in the notes is, who was right about the crabs, Goto or Miki? Were the crabs well-intentioned or a subtle dig? My assumption is that they're well-intentioned crabs.
Yeah, I would like to think that too.
But I also understand Miki's gut reaction of, like, he would only ever do this to torment me because that's, like, all he's ever done our entire lives.
Oh yeah, totally. Growing up, he was the only one who knew about her wanting to transition, and he put her down all the time for it.
Miki's interpretation is, like, valid, and, like you said, it's very understandable from her, like, perspective, but I do think that she is wrong in this instance, like, just because, I mean, if we're thinking about it logically, I don't think, like, he would be, like, smart enough to be like, oh, I'm gonna fuck up her nails, like, you know what I mean? Like, especially after the fight, like, they're already probably fucked up. Like,
yeah.
If you haven't seen this episode, you might think that the comment's, like, totally out of nowhere. But during the fight, the brother does make a comment, like, how can you even have a job when you have such a, like, refined manicure? Because, like, you wouldn't be able to do anything with your hands. So just for context for people who haven't watched this show.
Yeah. So that's also why I can easily see her being like, oh, yeah, this is directly a dig from that exact conversation that we had.
Mm-hmm.
Of like, how can I eat these crab legs with my manicure? You thought that they were implying that Miki's brother might be gay.
I guess, like, your comment about him just, like, being unhappy makes more sense. But there is a point where the brother and Miki are fighting where he's like, because of you, I haven't been able to do what I want to do. I thought that was him being like, because you are LGBT, I can't be LGBT. One of us has to be, like, a straight person. It could just be him being like, I'm not allowed to be happy because you're doing whatever you want.
Yeah, and so I have to handle all the responsible things. And so, you know, like, I have to work you for going out and doing your life. Yeah.
Yeah, I have to work for the city, like, doing tourism stuff.
I wanted to make one real quick last point about episode 3.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think something that's really consistent in this episode that works really well thematically and rings true for me and my experiences is this idea that sometimes the people who are, like, most bigoted and most opposed to trans women are people who actually have, like, some of the most, like, shared, like, trauma and, like, issues in their life, but, like, because of their own bigotries, like, refuse to empathize with trans people. Like, I'm thinking about, like, specifically a lot of, like, transphobia in the UK and just in general can be traced back to, like, Mumsnet and this, like, kind of, like, sociocultural, like, phenomenon of, like, young British mothers, like, kind of feeling extremely, like, isolated after they become, like, new mothers and whatnot. And as opposed to looking into online communities and also, like, thinking about how they connect with other women, say trans women, who likewise feel socially insulated and isolated, they just become more bigoted and kind of, like, attack these women and somehow, like, blame them for their own issues and insecurities. And that's really present here, is this idea that, like, this young designer could relate to Miki really, really well, but just chooses not to. Chooses to have somebody to put below herself to feel better about herself. Or Miki's brother could, like, see Miki as, like, an inspiration to be like, you know what, I'm also going to be brave and, like, think about what makes me truly happy, and I'm going to pursue it with the same, like, bravery that you do. But no. And I think that's, like, a key, like, message and, like, lesson to take away from is that, like, not just on, like, her story, but we lose so much and we owe it to ourselves to try to connect to people that we otherwise wouldn't think have similar issues, because most often they do.
Yeah. And that's speaking your truth. Sorry, I gotta get it at least one more time. I can read episode 4. Inspired by Miki and also his self-help book, Goto is planning on finally moving out. Miki and Yui meet for lunch, and Yui says that her boyfriend from back home has proposed to her. Miki pretends that she's not bothered by this, but she's actually really shaken up by the news. When she goes home, she finds out that Goto has left. Their boss tells Miki and Kaori to go to this fancy socialite party, aka a gathering of young people, in order to build relations with a business partner. The girls decide to use it as an opportunity to meet other single people. For this party, each of the women have to bring a dish, and Miki and her friend impress by bringing potato salad wrapped in ham. Delicious. However, they are upstaged by a woman named Manami, who makes custom rice balls and fried chicken. After the party, Kaori reflects on why she feels the need to get married, like, even in the first place. Miki points out that it's probably due to society telling her that it's the right thing to do. Manami takes a liking to Miki and wants to be friends with her, so she starts coming by to pick Miki up after work. But her tastes don't fit Miki's. Miki ends up exhausted by their outings, but she needs to keep up the friendship because of the business aspect. the day before Miki's birthday, Manami comes to Miki's apartment without asking, but she shows up with this delicious picnic basket that's full of wine and this food that pairs really well with it, and Miki ends up really enjoying herself. In the middle of this, Goto shows up. He tells Miki that there was a mistake with the apartment that he was supposed to be renting, and he needs to stay with her again. Manami asks if the two of them used to date, and then Goto asks if Manami was Miki's new girlfriend, and the group, they laugh together. Maybe not Miki so much, but... then Manami's fiancé, Kenichi, shows up, and he weasels his way into the apartment. He ruins the fun atmosphere, and he makes passive-aggressive comments about everybody. Miki takes Manami away for a moment and asks if she really wants to marry this guy, but Manami says yes. She believes that he can change. Kenichi starts making transphobic comments after this, though, and though Miki is resolved to just put up with it, Goto speaks up. He says that Manami must be really amazing to be able to live with somebody who is conceited, selfish, and discourteous like her fiancé is. He goes on to say that Kenichi doesn't know anything because Miki is an admirable and amazing woman, and he's glad to call her his friend. This embarrasses Miki so much, though, that she runs away. Miki reflects at her favorite spot, the aquarium, and Goto goes to meet her. He has a busted lip from being punched by Kenichi, but he tells Miki that both him and Manami punched Kenichi back, which, hell yeah, let's go. The clock strikes midnight, and Goto gives Miki her favorite convenience store donut that they had in the first episode, and they eat it together. The series ends with Miki getting her hair cut into this bob, and it's really cute.
Why are you laughing, Samantha?
Just the summary written here is accurately as anticlimactic as the end of the J drama, and that, like, the scene that ended all off on and tie everything in a nice little bow is Miki gets a haircut. She has short hair now. She looks good. Like, this episode is such a, like, falls so flat for me. It's like, yeah. I was really hoping, because episode really? 3 was such a slay, and, yeah. Like, I was really hoping for episode 4 to, like, be like, oh, like, she gets really close with Yui, or, like, she meets, like, another girl, or, like, something really exciting happens, and it's kind of just, like...
Yeah, it's like, oh, she and Yui officially break up. And then yeah. All the stuff with Manami feels... Well, actually, really quickly, Samantha, you said earlier that one thing that feels bad about the series is how constantly Miki gets so close to having what seems like it could be a girlfriend or a romantic relationship, and then it fails. The mixer where she meets Manami for the first time, this is number one example, because, like, a very sexy woman comes up and sits next to Miki, and they're about to start talking, when Manami walks in, trips, spills food everywhere, and all the attention is diverted right back to her, and then the girl that Miki was talking to just walks away.
She evaporates.
Yeah, and she never comes back. Sexy
doesn't even have a name.
Gone. Yeah.
I know, and she's so sexy.
She is. Yeah. I saw her, and I was like... I hope this is the plot of the episode. No!
Yeah, agreed.
I will say that at least, like, with Miki getting her haircut, that's like a, like, I am free of my past relationship. I'm starting fresh. I'm starting mm-hmm. new kind of a vibe, which
yeah,
I can vibe with.
Yeah.
I get that. And I also kind of relate to it as a recent owner of a mullet.
Yeah. Just got her haircut. And you felt emboldened.
I did. The, like, sociocultural practice of getting your hair cut after, like, a breakup, I support with my full heart. I just don't think it's presented particularly well or has very great direction or writing in this episode.
You know how it kind of felt? It kind of felt like Squid Games.
It did feel like Squid Games! You're so right!
Oh, you know?
Sorry not to scream, but you're so right.
It felt like Squid Games, where it's like, oh, this doesn't really actually mean a whole lot.
What happened to Miki? Squid Games!
Erin, you mentioned the aquarium. I wanted to mention this back in episode 1, but we were running short on time, so let's talk about it now. Miki goes to the aquarium in every single episode, and she goes to see the lionfish, which I thought was an interesting choice, because lionfish are, like, these very, very beautiful saltwater fish. But they also have these, like, long spines that are poisonous. So, obviously, mm-hmm. you never want to get too close. You never want to touch because they can be really, really painful if you get stung.
Lionfish is to life as a girl as porcupines are to Evangelion.
Do you mean hedgehogs?
Oh, is it hedgehogs?
It is hedgehogs. but I was going to say the same fucking thing, so you are right.
Oh, hell yeah, let's go!
I've seen part of it. Boo! I didn't like it. I didn't finish it. I watched 19 episodes and then I quit 7 episodes.
Lionfish are... Aaron! Once again, transphobic. All the trans media. Oh, shit, Evangelion. Matrix. Terminator.
Yeah, wow. Terminator, that classic transgender staple, the Terminator, starring Arnold Schwarzenegger.
You wouldn't get it.
Okay, so sorry. Let me say it again. Lionfish are to life as a girl as hedgehogs are to Sonic the Hedgehog.
Actually, yeah, you're kind of right.
Explain. Elaborate.
I'm so right, aren't I? I will not elaborate.
Okay. Thank you.
In this episode, the aquarium attendant tells Miki that lionfish look aloof, but they're capable of teamwork. He also does not elaborate. I was like, what?
I very much thought that the lionfish theming, because Miki always goes to see them alone, and because they are poisonous and, like, obviously you would not want to get close to them, I thought that this was supposed to stand in as, like, symbolism for how difficult it is for Miki to just exist in the world and how hard it is for her to get close to people. But then, at the end, we get this weird twist where it's, like, they're capable of teamwork, which, what is this it's supposed to imply, what? Aside from just, like, trans women are better when they work together? Like, I don't...
Nothing about the lionfish thing works for me, even a little bit. I'm gonna be honest with you.
Absolutely not.
I think too, especially, like, I don't mean to, like, psychoanalyze this, but unfortunately, it's what I'm gonna have to do. Having the lionfish, like, a creature that's dangerous because of its penetrative, like, spine, could hurt other things, and likening it to Miki feels uncomfortable. Yes. I don't like it as a visual symbol. With Shinji, it makes sense, because Shinji is a freak, but also I love Shinji, and I kid him, but I digress. My main point is, because it frames it as Miki is a danger or a threat or hurting others by getting too close to them, and that's not the case. That's not the case at all.
Yeah,
and even
all.
Like, in the third episode, there's kind of like the same kind of like theme is reasserted with like Miki saying that she got too close and Goto saying like, oh, well, maybe there's like a safe distance you can get with your brother. Which, like, I think the show thinks that... The show is presenting it in such a way that Miki's getting too close to certain people, which I think is bullshit and a really bad message, as opposed to, like, a better, like, image would be, like... Like, the hedgehog, for example, can't get too close to other things because it's also afraid of getting hurt itself, and that it's, like, a protective barrier. But Miki doesn't really have, like, that, like, super protective barrier other than, like, her, like, superficiality and her thinking that, like, everyone is being, like... not, like, earnest with their compliments or with their comments. It would work if it was framed that way, but it's not framed that way. Like, Miki is, like, incredibly vulnerable. Every single episode, she is, like, victimized of microaggressions and transphobia. Like, framing it as, like, she's just like the lionfish is bizarre. And it just doesn't work. The aquarium theme just doesn't work at all.
It doesn't. It doesn't work.
It is pretty.
Not to, like, defend the show, but I did see it more as when Miki, like, talked about, like, getting too close, just like how she was wrong with the reason that her brother sent the package, potentially, like, she's creating this distance herself by, like, misunderstanding people. And so to me, this was just like, you are misunderstanding people. Again, there's been this through line of her being really superficial in her interactions with other people. She thinks that they think like she thinks, and they're just calculating all the time, when actually, like, Minami is a perfect example of, like, she just really wanted to be friends with Miki, and she didn't have any other motive behind her actions aside from that.
Yeah, I definitely think that that's, like, what they intended, but I also do think that that's bad messaging, because it's basically saying, like, forgive all the people who hurt you, even if it's unintentional. Like, this whatever, you know? They didn't mean anything by it.
You're capable of teamwork.
I know. Yeah,
she and Tomo-chan would be.
That's the thing, is they would be girl bosses if they just dated. I don't understand. Like,
they were
Tomo
roommates.
Is heterosexual.
They were roommates.
And we can fix her. No. But, like.
No, but Episode she's got to set her up with Godo. You're so right.
Either one of those conclusions would be so satisfactory.
Yeah, for Tomo. Yeah. We could see Miki being like, I'm going to go out and find my girlfriend now. And we could get a happy ending through Tomo and Godo. And I would be. I would like it better than this.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be perfectly 100% happy, but I would like it better than this.
That's the thing, is this show does just kind of end on a really flat note, in my opinion. Like, just like the conclusion of, like, oh, Goto's moving back in. It's like, okay, so we're just back at square one?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it just, like, nothing has changed since episode one.
Maybe this worked better in a novel format, too.
Yeah.
And just didn't translate well to a drama because we wanted to have a good end, right?
Yeah. And I just, like, I don't know. Overall, the show just doesn't work for me. Like,
because
it's just not good. It's just not a good show. It's like, I wouldn't even call it mid. I would just call it bad, honestly. Because even as like a J-drama, there aren't enough moments that I'm like gagged. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm not like on the edge of my seat like I am with the
Magic.
Virgin Wizard one. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Where's the scene of them angrily vacuuming, which is product placement?
Oh my god, yes.
I'm missing out.
As if you have been a long-time Gaze listener, you will know that when we did our Overwatch episode back in year one, I was so rudely interrupted by my K-drama alarm, an alarm I set on my phone to remind me that it's time to watch Korean dramas. With my former roommate and close friend from college, we have watched K-drama together once a week for like 4 years now, and we typically just watch one or two episodes in a sitting. But the first drama that we ever watched together was a drama called Melting Me Softly, about two people who accidentally get cryogenically frozen and are frozen for like 30 years, and then they wake up in like 2020, and it's like, oh my god, so much time has passed. How are we going to live our lives? But the show is sponsored by Dyson vacuums, and so in every episode, there's a scene of someone being like, oh no, how am I going to negotiate taking care of my dying parents? And then they like pull a Dyson vacuum off the wall, and it zooms in on the Dyson logo on the handle as they like thoughtfully vacuum for a minute, and then they put it back on the wall, and then the drama just resumes as normal.
The next episode, oh no, I knocked over my late parents' urn.
Oh my god.
I love how much that one got you. Like, you laughed at your own joke harder than I laughed at it.
It was a good joke.
I'm here laughing too. I'm laughing with you, Sammy. Okay, we're going to have to wrap this up because there was a note posted on my door this morning being like, hi, I'm your neighbor and I'm having a party for my 30th birthday and it's going to be loud. Don't call the cops. And they are now setting up a guitar with a loudspeaker.
Oh my god. Okay, we have to end right now.
We gotta do it quick.
Let me read the outro.
Wait, any other thoughts? It seems like they've stopped for a moment.
This show sucks. I wouldn't recommend it to people, especially if you're trans feminine. If you're like really into J-dramas and you don't respect trans women, I guess you might like this. I don't know.
Samantha, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Lil Estradiol. That's LILESTRADIOL. And I also have an Etsy, Punks Do Poppers, where I sell prints. They are a little not safe for work, so just keep that in mind. And Transcribe. Go to transcribe.inc. I should have a new essay on Gummo posted by the time this is uploaded.
Oh, wow. Yeah, let's go.
You were posting also, new you content in tandem with...
You do the illustrations for your articles, right?
Yeah.
Oh my god, they're so good. I loved the one for Squid Game.
Thank you. Thank you.
I was like, wow, Sammy found this really cool image. And I was like, wait, Sammy drew that? Wah.
Yeah, Sammy's an artist.
I am. Yeah.
And is making and selling prints now as well.
So. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Thank you everyone for listening. You should consider following us on Twitter at GazeGaze, where you can tweet with us and DM us with your thoughts about this episode or any future content or send us recommendations. You can also maybe reach us on Tumblr at GazeGazePodcast.tumblr.com. Someday I will update it, I swear. Finally, you can get in contact with us through email at Aaron@GazeGaze.com. again, send us thoughts, ideas, and recommendations. And we are still following the procedure that if you send us an actual email instead of a DM, we will send you a mystery attachment. So who knows what it could be. Many thanks to Kate and Leslie of Neon and Nude for letting us use their songs Look in Love and Do You Pretty Thing for our intro and our outro music. You should go buy their album at neonandnude.bandcamp.com, and you can also stream it on Spotify. For our next episode, we are doing another suggestion from Alpaca that was already on our to-do list that I'm very excited about, which is The Children's Hour, starring Audrey Hepburn. It is about two elementary school teachers that fall in love. So I'm excited for it.
That sounds so cute.
It sounds cute, yeah. But I think it's also going to be a lot about homophobia. So
we'll see. Also, hi, Alpaca. How are you?
Hope you're well. But until then, I am Erin.
And I'm Erin.
And I'm Samantha.
And thank you for coming back. We're so excited to have you back for our Danish Girl episode later this year.
Yes. Oh, my God.
We're doing
so excited for Danish Girl. We're going to watch it, and I'm going to fucking hate it and feel like an asshole again.
I can't wait.
Sammy will be back. I believe it's around November.
Not soon enough.
Yeah, it should be in November. Samantha will be back.
Yeah, after
the we'll have to come up with something else if you want to come back again.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, we're all gay.
Yeah.
You okay. Know
what
I feel like...
What?
I'm sorry, one last joke. I feel like on this show, like... This is Pawn Stars, and whenever you have, like, a piece of media with, like, a trans woman in it, it's like, let me look at my guy who can, like, analyze this, and I'm that.
Well, Samantha, come back for the cis not women untrue. Content. Would you want to?
No. But I just think it's funny.
No, you're so funny. Anyway, bye.
Bye.